Log Talk Radio.
About 10 days after 9/11, I went through the Pentagon and I saw Secretary Rumsfeld and Deputy Secretary Wolfowitz. I went downstairs just to say hello to some of the people on the Joint Staff who had used to work for me. And one of the generals called me and he said, "Sir, you got to come in. You got to come in and talk to me a second." I said, "Well, you're too busy." He said, "No." He says, "We've made the decision. We're going to war with Iraq." This was on or about the 20th of September. I said, "We're going to war with Iraq? Why?" He said, "I don't know." He said, "I guess they don't know what else to do." So I said, "Well, did they find some information connecting Saddam to Al-Qaeda?" He said, no. He says, "There's nothing new that way. They just made the decision to go to war with Iraq." He said, "I guess it's like we don't know what to do about terrorists, but we've got a good military and we can take down governments." And he said, "I guess if the only tool you have is a hammer, every problem has to look like a nail." So I came back to see him a few weeks later, and by that time we were bombing in Afghanistan. I said, "Are we still going to war with Iraq?" And he said, "Oh, it's worse than that." He said, he reached over on his desk, he picked up a piece of paper, and he said, I just got this down from upstairs, meaning the Secretary of Defense's office, today. And he said, "This is a memo that describes how we're going to take out 7 countries in 5 years, starting with Iraq and then Syria, Lebanon, Libya, Somalia, Sudan, and finishing off Iran."
All right, everybody.
The truth is about the Middle East is, had there been no oil there, it would be like Africa. Nobody is threatening to intervene in Africa. The problem is the opposite. We keep asking for people to intervene and stop it. And there's no question that the presence of petroleum throughout the region has sparked great power involvement. Whether that was the specific motivation for the coup or not, I can't tell you. But there was definitely, there's always been this attitude that somehow we could intervene and use force in the region.
All right, everybody. If you heard that, I know I've played that clip before. That is General Clark expressing what he was told about our intervention into Iraq before we went into Iraq, and also naming some other countries that we were going to be involved in. I have to focus on this because I'm trying to put it all together in my mind, so I need your help. And yeah, Linda, you're right. We do have more oil than the Middle East right here at home. Lindsey Williams had talked about that long ago. If you read Lindsey's book, Peak Oil, The Energy Non-Crisis, he knew about this back in the 70s. He knew that the U.S. had more oil than the Middle East. So that begs a very large question. Why? Why would we ignore our own resources and rely on Middle Eastern oil? Yeah, I'm telling you, if you didn't know that, Lindsey Williams, you know, a lot of people give him a bad rap. He's a Baptist minister or pastor, preacher, and he worked for the Alyeska pipeline back in the 70s when they were building the Alaskan pipeline. And he was taken in, so to speak, kind of under their wing. And he saw the Gull Island oil well when it came in, when they first drilled it. There are amazing reports, and I forget the number. I think it's 4, the equivalent of 4 747 jet engines that are running pumps to pump the natural gas back into the ground because they've capped the wells. They were told that they weren't going to bring those wells online. And back then, I guarantee you, it didn't have anything to do with the greenies. We weren't talking about global warming or any of that crap back in those days. It was about money. It was about the petrodollar. Plain and simple. and about global dominance, making America the world's policeman. So there's a lot of things I want to try and cover tonight, and forgive me because I've not put a lot of effort into this, but, you know, with all of this stuff that's coming out of late, I really wanted people to get a little more understanding. Now, the other day I talked about a lawsuit that was filed very recently. It was filed back in April, and then it was updated or amended and filed October 25th, so just a few days ago. It's a $43 trillion lawsuit with a page and a half of named defendants. It's important to understand that everything in that lawsuit, as far as the named defendants and what they're accused of doing, I believe is legitimate. I've read through the document. I believe it's absolutely legitimate. What bothers me in the document is it seems to me to be politically motivated. What I mean by that is the individual who did all this research, put all this time and effort into this lawsuit, went out of his way in his brief to point out that only Democrats were involved in this fiasco, and named George H.W. Bush and George W. Bush both specifically as innocents. Now, I've got a hard time believing that. And I don't understand, as an attorney, filing a lawsuit, why one would concern himself with who he didn't find involved. Who cares? You simply are looking for the facts, the evidence, the truth, and you file accordingly. The suit seems almost to be an attempt to exonerate the elder Bush and the son from any wrongdoing in the debacle that we know of as our financial crisis. That bugs me. And the story kind of reminded me of another story I had heard years ago about a guy named Leo Wanta, and the fact that the Bush family and the Clinton family were doing everything they could to keep a large amount of money from getting back into the U.S. Treasury and thus in the hands of American citizens, i.e. paying off our debt. Now, the sums that we're talking about here, $43 trillion, that is an astronomical amount of money. So much so that it is not something that we can even wrap our minds around. And had I done my homework before I started the show tonight, I would have had the link for a site that would give you some kind of comparative perspective, if you will, on just how much money $1 trillion is. And I will do some digging around for it, but I don't want to get too far off base. Leo Wanta, if you've never heard of Leo Wanta, Leo Wanta was allegedly an ambassador. I can't help but include him in this story in light of our ambassador from Benghazi. Leo Wanta was allegedly a U.S. ambassador and one who was sent to the former Soviet Union to bankrupt the Soviet Union. And he did so. And as a result, he had in his possession, in various accounts, somewhere around $27.5 trillion U.S. How is this possible? Well, according to the legend, Mr. Wanta was using the currency market to speculate in Russian rubles, their currency, against the dollar or God only knows what other currency. Nonetheless, Mr. Wanta was able to bankrupt the Soviet Union via currency manipulation. I find that extremely plausible. If we go back in time, we see there is a very loved individual by the name of George Soros who almost bankrupted the Bank of England with the very same strategy, currency manipulation. The man made $12 billion in one day. So it's not out of the realm of possibility. One of the issues I have with the story is it flies in the face of what we were told bankrupted the Soviet Union. Right? After all, it was our involvement with the Mujahideen freedom fighters in Afghanistan that bankrupted the Soviet Union. That's what we're told. They spent so much money, so much blood and treasure over in Afghanistan in a 10-year war that it bankrupted them. Well, I'm not buying it. If we look at the amount of money the U.S. has spent in Iraq, we're at about $4 trillion. Now, that's a lot of money, but it's chicken scratch in comparison to $43 trillion or $27.5 trillion. So, where are we going or where am I going with all of this? Well, a couple of places. I think the lawsuit is legitimate. If you've not seen it, $43 trillion lawsuit that targets several people in the administration and just about every major bank in the United States. That, I believe, is legitimate. I'm not sure about the amounts, but then again, because it's involved in the derivatives market, it's certainly possible. For those of you that are not familiar with the derivatives market, the 9 leading banks in the United States, and by leading I mean those that have the largest exposure in the derivatives market, their exposure equates to $228 trillion. So again, at this point, $27.5 trillion or $43 trillion is pocket change. That's mind-numbing. You are talking about, you know, a pallet of cash. If you took a standard pallet, we can all relate to the size of a standard pallet, and you stacked it with $100 bills, that pallet stacked shoulder high to a 6-foot tall man would contain $100 million. It would take a square of those pallets to make $100 billion. It would take a tower of those square sets, 465 feet high, to get $1 trillion. It's a lot of money. The idea that we should focus only on the money and the shenanigans that occurred in the housing debacle is specious, because it also, at the same time, in an attempt to exonerate the Bush family and those administrations that were under the Bushes, it takes our attention away from the other theft that's been going on in this country for decades, and that is the theft from the American taxpayer through war. War is a racket, as Smedley Butler put it, and it's quite profitable if you're one of the corporations that make your money with building the weapons of war and the technology that we use today. So I don't want anyone to get the idea that I'm trying to let one group of political mosquitoes off of the hook, because I'm not. But I think if we look at these things in their totality, we might be able to develop a much clearer picture and put together perhaps a timeline, which is something I'm going to work on. I want to shift gears. I'm not going to go back and replay General Wesley Clark. Well, you know what? I might. It's only a 2-minute clip, so I'm going to play it because I want those people that
about
weren't here to hear.
10 days after 9/11, I went through the Pentagon and I saw Secretary Rumsfeld and Deputy Secretary Wolfowitz. I went downstairs just to say hello to some of the people on the Joint Staff who used to work for me. And one of the generals called me and he said, "Sir, you got to come in. You got to come in and talk to me a second." I said, "Well, you're too busy." He said, "No." He says, "We've made the decision. We're going to war with Iraq." This was on or about the 20th of September. I said, "We're going to war with Iraq? Why?" He said, "I don't know." He said, "I guess they don't know what else to do." So I said, "Well, did they find some information connecting Saddam to Al-Qaeda?" He said, no. He says, "There's nothing new that way. They just made the decision to go to war with Iraq." He said, "I guess it's like we don't know what to do about terrorists, but we've got a good military and we can take down governments." And he said, "I guess if the only tool you have is a hammer, every problem has to look like a nail." So I came back to see him a few weeks later, and by that time we were bombing in Afghanistan. I said, "Are we still going to war with Iraq?" And he said, "Oh, it's worse than that." He said, he reached over on his desk, he picked up a piece of paper, and he said, I just got this down from upstairs, meaning the Secretary of Defense's office today, and he said, "This is a memo that describes how we're going to take out 7 countries in 5 years, starting with Iraq and then Syria, Lebanon, Libya, Somalia, Sudan, and finishing off Iran."
Wow.
The truth is about the Middle East is, had there been no oil there, it would be like Africa. Nobody is threatening to intervene in Africa. The problem is the opposite. We keep asking for people to intervene and stop it. And there's no question that the presence of petroleum throughout the region has sparked great power involvement. Whether that was the specific motivation for the coup or not, I can't tell you, but there's always been this attitude that somehow we could intervene and use force in the region.
All right, so I wanted to play that for you so that you could hear what General Clark is reiterating, that he was told days after 9/11, 10 days after September 11th, 2001. And it's important because he names the countries in there. And while it may not have been 5 years, we're quite a bit more than 5 years out from that time. But it is important to note the names of those countries because damn sure we're involved in every one of them. Now, I want to take you back in time. And I'm going to play everyone's favorite Secretary of State, Miss Hillary Clinton, and I hate to do that to you guys, but you know, you got to do it. But I want to play Hillary, and this is from some testimony that she gave back in 2009 about our involvement. Well, gee, if I can find it in here, I might have to refresh. Boy, I hate to do that. Well, that kind of puts a kink in my plans. I've got some audio that I wanted to play. The audio with Hillary Clinton from 2009 is Hillary explaining, quite literally, that we are currently fighting in Iraq and Afghanistan and around the Middle East the very people that we created when we funded the Mujahideen Freedom Fighters. And yes, it is, Dean, and I apologize that I have that rag on. I had it on watching the storm. But Hillary was explaining that we created the Al-Qaeda. I mean, there's no mistaking it. She even references Pakistan and how we used Pakistan and their ISI, which is Pakistan's security agency, to funnel money and weapons to these quote-unquote Mujahideen freedom fighters. Well, what do you know? We actually funded these terrorists. We created Al-Qaeda. It's exactly what she says in the clip. Then we reel back a little bit farther in the Wayback Machine, back to the 2008 presidential campaign. In 2007, when Barack Obama said, you know, we might find it necessary to bomb Pakistan. He got a lot of heat for that comment. John McCain took him out of context, like that never happens, and really tried to call him on the carpet for his reference to Pakistan and military action. In the clip that I loaded, that's not in our studio, Obama sets him straight. And he says, no, what I said was that if we have actionable intelligence that bin Laden is in Pakistan, then we have to go after him. And we will. And he made that comment that we will go after bin Laden and we will kill bin Laden in Pakistan. And I found that incredible. That's from 2007. Now, McCain was telling him how we have to be very careful because Pakistan is such a wonderful ally, and we have to provide them with money and funding, you see. And at the very least, we need to be like Teddy Roosevelt and walk softly but carry a really big stick. It's incredible to listen to this stuff, to go back and just recognize in hindsight what's going on now versus what we've been told. We have such short memories that we seem to forget a lot of these things. Oh, that's all right, man. Mike, I'm just glad you showed up, brother. So, I mean, if we start to weave this tale together, just going back to 1979 and Jimmy Carter, right? Because after all, let's not forget it was Ronald Reagan that defeated the Soviet Union. Mr. Gorbachev, tear down this wall. We know that we always, you know, that's our mantra. Yes, you're absolutely right, Linda. This is the foreign entanglements that the founders warned us about. So we're involved in dethroning the Soviet Union, but that wasn't really a Ronald Reagan program in the beginning. That was a Jimmy Carter program. That was a Democrat program. Wasn't a Republican deal. Now, it certainly continued under Reagan, but was it really our involvement in Afghanistan that bankrupted the Soviet Union? And by the way, just for those that haven't noticed, the Soviet Union's still around. The Vladimir Putin guy, he's over there, and they still have a viable government, and you know, they still got a lot of weapons, or at least that's what we're told. So it looks to me like the whole thing has been a big, great big BS balloon that's been floated, just blowing smoke up the tailpipe of the American public. Yeah, communism's dead. You believe that too, right? Meanwhile, the American public, the wealth of this country, was being robbed slowly but surely. And then it got kicked into high gear. If you think about the Leo Wanta story, if it's true, and I don't know that it's true, just like this $43 trillion lawsuit, I did go and do some research on Mr. Wanta. I tried to find as much information on it as I could. I did find where there was a lawsuit that was filed. I do know that the man exists. I do know that the Internal Revenue Service went after him for some unpaid taxes in Michigan or Wisconsin, I believe. So there is enough information out there on Leo Wanta to leave you wanting. Pardon the entendre there, but you just can't find enough to discern whether it's legitimate or whether it's just some tall tale spun up by someone, much the same as this lawsuit, $43 trillion lawsuit. But let's presume for a moment that the Leo Wanta story is legitimate. And this happened during the end of the Reagan administration, the beginning of the Clinton administration. Here you have a U.S. ambassador that has $27.5 trillion that should be repatriated back into the United States Treasury Department. Now, that presents some issues. Okay, logistically, you can't inject $27.5 trillion into our economy overnight. It would cause mass inflation or massive price increases, I should say. But nonetheless, you would presume that a competent president would do everything possible to facilitate the transfer of that money, if it truly exists. And then we can begin to pay down our debt, not in huge leaps and bounds, but in large enough chunks that we can have a balanced budget. Congress won't need to collect any taxes, and we can have true economic growth on the shoulders of a productive public, the way it should be. But that didn't happen. It didn't happen under Clinton. It didn't happen under Bush the first. It didn't happen under Bush the second. And coincidentally, It hasn't happened under Obama either. No, what we have in the interim is an expansion of our wars and a further acceleration of theft from the American people to the tune of $43 trillion, which is outlined in the new lawsuit. Can we wrap our minds around the amount of money that we're talking about here? Now we're starting to talk about some real money. I mean, let's face it, we're knocking on the door of $50 trillion here, aren't we? $50 trillion is almost the total gross domestic product of the United States for 5 years. I say almost. It'd be actually more like 3.75 years, but I'm not a mathematician, so forgive me. What the hell are we doing? Not to mention, we've got things like this in Benghazi, where I don't think we left our ambassador out to dry. I think we set him up to die. Your government, our government, my government, facilitated a plan that resulted in the murder of one of our ambassadors. Not that I think that our ambassador, Ambassador Stevens, was pure as the driven snow. I don't believe he was. I believe he was facilitating the movement of weapons. It's the same old story. Do we remember back when Ollie North was on the chopping block? And golly gee, who was it that was in Congress and in control back? Oh yeah, that was right. That's the Democrats. Where are the hearings? Where are the hearings for this current debacle in Libya? And why aren't we going after specific individuals the same way it was done with Ollie North? And they wanted desperately to tie that to Reagan. And again, all the while, not wanting to mention that this was a program that started under Jimmy Carter. And we get our panties all in a bunch over the Gunwalker scandal on the border. Are you kidding me? We've been doing the Gunrunner scandal extraordinaire around the globe and primarily in the Middle East for decades, ladies and gentlemen. And only now are we getting upset about it? I think the American people really need to take a step back and reevaluate what they truly support, what they really believe. I welcome any of you to call in. Our call-in number is 646-378-0321. Again, that's 646-378-0321. I would love to hear others' input on this topic or any other topic you want to talk about. I really didn't do a lot of preparation for tonight's show. I've been fairly distracted of late, I have to admit. I have a new hobby, and that's kept me pretty busy. And I want to acknowledge some folks in the chat room. I see we've got my brother Dean Shook. Always a pleasure to see Brother Dean in the show. And, of course, Mike from the hot seat left is never right. Mike and his missus just had twins, so we want to congratulate them again. And I still haven't seen any pictures, Mike, but, you know, I'll hold out for a while. We have the lovely Miss Linda Sills. Linda does a show here on Patriot Families on Wednesday evenings at 7 called Right from the Left Coast, because, of course, Miss Linda lives out on the left coast, out in California. And then we have a couple of, well, with one regular I recognize, which is Jomer. So if anybody wants to call in, and that looks like Miss Linda right there, so we'll pick her up. How are you, young lady?
Fine. Can you hear me?
I can hear you perfectly.
Hello. Oh, good. How's everything going? I know it's Sunday. We have, I can't believe the weather here. I wish I could box it up and take it to wherever I'm going to get out of this state to.
Well, it's got to be better than what we're experiencing. We're getting some of the
I know.
Some of the weather from this huge perfect storm that's moving in. It's getting cold
exactly.
and windy.
I mean, it was 82. It was just right now I'm just feeling like it's a spring day. It's gorgeous. I don't know why we get these Santa Ana conditions in the early winter times. That's what's going on. So, the Benghazi thing, you know. And I know that people like all the other administrations, like Bush and Cheney and the rest of them, believe me, I know they're not saints, those idiots. They're evil, and they're weaving their own place in Hades, I'm telling you. But, you know, even Saddam Hussein got a trial. What's going on with Mubarak and Gaddafi and Ambassador Stevens, I'm sorry, that's not right. I don't
What's
care.
What's murder? It's
what
murder.
The guys are doing. I don't care if he's going back to get the damn weapons to do some, you know, recouping, right, wrong, or indifferent. You're right, he was set up. And it was by, the salamander in chief. And I'd bet on it.
Yeah, and, you know, I mean, the angry Jew last night, he had a very legitimate and valid point. And I have to admit that, you know, reading the stories and all the theory or hypothesis that came out surrounding the whole thing, I was more than willing to jump on the bandwagon. And I guess part of it is emotion, because I really don't like the current commander in chief. I think he's a snake. But then again, I don't like most of the folks that we have in politics, period. Whether
oh
it's
God.
On whether it's local or my state level or the federal level.
I know. They're disgusting. I mean, that's why Congress has a 9% approval rating. The only ones that have a less approval rating is the media. They're at 8%. Oy.
Well, and, you know, I mean, I hate to just jump on the bandwagon without thinking it through, but it certainly makes a lot of sense. And I hope to God that we actually see an investigation, a real investigation to get to the bottom of this thing.
Don't hold our breath, though.
Well, I'm certainly not going to hold my breath, because we know that, you know, if history is any indicator, it will be a whitewash. It'll be a little dog and pony show at best.
Yeah, but if
you
this
know,
had been somebody like even Bush, the son, the press would be screaming to the tops of their lungs. You know they would.
Oh, well, absolutely. And,
God,
you know, they're being much more reserved at this point. And I made the point last night on Mike's show, you know, to me it's incredible that all of this is converging right now, before the election. And I don't doubt for a moment that, you know, the storyline behind the idea that we were going to have a kidnapping rather than an assassination, we were going to have a kidnapping that would allow a military exercise. Well, see, I think the trade would be, I mean, if you think about it, if the Muslim Brotherhood kidnapped one of our ambassadors and Obama just went and traded the blind sheikh, well, that wouldn't really make him much of a hero, would it? Of course
I
not.
I don't think so.
No. So you would have to have a situation where we run a military exercise and we capture back our ambassador and we kill all the bad guys. Well, then a month later, you have, you know, gee, the blind sheikh is in really poor health, and for humanitarian reasons, we're going to send him home to live out the last days, just like we saw with that jerk from the Lockerbie bombing.
Yep.
Okay, so then everybody's reputation is intact as a hero.
Oh, God. Yeah, it's disgusting.
I think that's really the most plausible scenario. And given all of the facts that we have thus far, I think it is the most plausible scenario. And like I said, I like to try. I don't always accomplish it, but I do like to try to apply Occam's razor. And Occam's razor is simply the idea that the simplest explanation is typically the correct explanation. You know, we can
it's funny because when you talk about, you know, we know what this guy is. I mean, he's been campaigning since he got in. He doesn't know anything else. He's a community organizer. He's a dyed-in-the-wool Marxist from birth. You know, he will do almost anything. But if Lindsay Williams is correct, and if the scuttlebutt is correct that some friend of the Obamas bought them a $44 million mansion in Hawaii, he knows he's going. You know, I mean, I don't know. We'll see. We got to play it out in the next 7 or 8 days.
Well, you know, part of my intent with going through redundantly, you know, all the things going back to 79 with the Carter administration is just simply point out that even though, you know, this lawsuit, a $43 trillion lawsuit, where we're naming, you know, high-level Democrats left and right and trying to exonerate the Bushes, I'm not going to discount the guy's credibility with his evidence and the facts against the Democrats that he's naming simply because he's in the tank for the Bushes for some reason or another. But let's keep everything in perspective.
Right.
You know, this whole left-right paradigm thing gets us off track way too easily. And there are every one of them has got blood on their hands. Every one of them.
Yes, they do. Oh, yeah. Well, they're, you know, I was talking to a gal the other day, and they were outraged about the Benghazi scandal. And I said, and she says, well, I hope that everybody gets, you know, brought before Congress and, you know, is questioned to the max. And I said, oh, trust me, someday they'll be brought to the judgment seat. They won't like what they hear.
Well, and you know, that's probably the only hope we have
in them getting a
true judgment. Because let's face it, the majority of them, they've got so much dirt on one another that there's never going to be a real investigation.
I think this is
clearly why we see the likes of Barney Frank and others, you know, stepping aside. They're not going to run anymore. They're getting out of the game.
They were hiding.
I'm taking up my marbles, and I'm going to go play somewhere else. And I think we've got Mike on the line. Mike, is that you, sir?
Hey, Ron, how you doing?
Wow, hey, man. Mike. How about yourself?
Doing good. You know, you mentioned the weather deal that we're going to have. My wife already took the kids to her parents' house. They've got a bigger house. They've got a generator. So I've got them packed and out of here. And I got a suitcase in case my job puts us in a hotel. Because in IT, hurricanes, acts of God, or nuclear holocaust, we have to keep the ship rolling. So,
Mike, you didn't tell me that your in-laws were terrorists. I never knew that.
Terrorists?
Well, yeah, my God, if they've got a generator, they must be preppers. They've got to be terrorists.
Oh, you're right. That's right. That's one of the signs. No, you know what? They'll be fine because, well, they voted for Obama, so they're okay.
Dude, I don't know if I'd let my kids stay there. That's, you know, shacking up with terrorists. That's
well, you know, desperate times call for desperate measures, I guess. So, you know, what can I do?
So what do you think, man?
Well, I'm a little confused. So,
okay.
Are we trying to say that Obama had this idea in his head that he could have Ambassador Stevens kidnapped safely and
yes.
then get him back alive?
Yes.
So, in other words, Obama thought that he could trust savages and then
yeah.
Clinton and Panetta signed off on that?
Well, here's the thing. If you and I'll have to find the link. I know I sent it to Linda, and it's just taking a timeline and the facts that we know, and then adding a little hypothesis. And if you look at the timeline, and this goes back to June of this year.
Mm-hmm.
So the hypothesis is this: Obama wants an October surprise to secure the election, because he knows that his butt is on the rail out the door.
Mm-hmm.
That is the plan.
Right.
So he is in contact with, what's the guy's name, Morsi or whatever, the president in Egypt.
Yes.
They work out a deal that, you know, you and I are Obama and Morsi, and I tell you what. You get your guys, I'll set it up. You get your guys to kidnap our ambassador in Benghazi, and I'll get you the blind sheikh back to Egypt. Okay? So, the ambassador knows that security is a joke. And if you go back and read the particulars on the security over there in Benghazi, what you find is that the security contract was awarded to a British firm that nobody ever heard of until they got the contract. Now, they hand over the guard detail of the embassy compound to the 17th Martyrs Brigade, which is a bunch of local camel jockeys, for lack of a better term.
Mm-hmm.
They are unarmed. They have no arms, no weapons. They're not going to fight back. They know that on this date, a group is going to storm the embassy. Not a problem. They're going to open the door and just let them in. Now all we've got to do is get the ambassador at the embassy on that day. Why? Well, gee, because he's not staying there because he knows the security stinks. And he's no dummy. Not a problem. State Department arranges a meeting between the ambassador and the Attorney General of Turkey to discuss some weapons that got out of Libya in through Turkey into Syria.
Yep.
We arrange the meeting to take place on September 11th. Now, of course,
can I just stop you?
Sure.
Can I just stop right there? All right, why are we worried about weapons? And when I say we, I mean Barry and company. Why are they worried about weapons going from Libya to Syria when we put in this new Libyan government and we're supporting the Syrian rebels? So why are we sweating that?
Well, we're not. But you got to have an excuse, right, to get the guy in the embassy on the day you want him there.
Uh-huh.
Jesus. See,
so you get him at the embassy and you have the meeting late enough in the day that you can reasonably presume he's going to choose to spend the night there. You got a group of guys that know they're supposed to storm the compound and kidnap this guy on this day. You've actually got a drone rerouted overhead to film the whole thing so you can watch it go down.
Jesus.
Now we got a small problem. Mr. Stevens has a couple of tag-alongs that they didn't count on, two ex-Navy SEALs.
Mm-hmm.
They're not in on the deal. They're not just going to lay down. They're going to fight.
Right.
So gunfire breaks out. Oh, crap. They get Stevens into the safe room, and now he's locked in, and there's no way they can get him out of there. Well, we'll just set the place on fire and smoke him out.
Who's setting what fire to smoke who out?
Okay, so the little terrorist group, right, that wants to kidnap the ambassador, they say, okay, well, we'll just set it on fire. That'll smoke him out, and then we can kidnap him.
Mm-hmm.
So you set it on fire. You got a problem. The guy dies of smoke inhalation. Him and his personal bodyguard, the ex-Navy SEAL, they're dead. Well, now you don't have a kidnap victim. There can't be a heroic rescue. Meanwhile, the CIA guys at a safe house a mile away, they hear the gunfire. They're told to stand down. They said, screw that. They run to help.
All right, question.
Yeah.
Question. When do you suppose that Ambassador Stevens was dead? Like where? Where and when?
I suppose in a safe room in the embassy.
All right, here's the problem with that. I thought they showed Ambassador Stevens being dragged out of there by three or four savages, and he was still barely alive.
He
I thought they showed that on Fox.
He could have been dead.
I don't believe
it. Well, it looked
was.
Like he was kind of moving to me.
Right. I believe.
And he was
outside.
So it wasn't a safe room, and he was already outside being dragged, and he was still barely alive.
Well, there were a lot of things we heard early on. We heard that he was captured alive and then tortured and raped.
Right.
And murdered.
Right.
You know? I don't know. I've not seen any footage that showed him coming out alive. I don't know how.
Oh, yeah, it was
on
Fox. Oh, yeah, I saw it.
Well,
yeah,
I'll have to look into that. But nonetheless, Obama was watching the whole thing. And we know from the emails, the internal emails.
So was the she-devil.
We also know that he signed an executive order to send $425 million to Egypt.
That's nothing new.
Well, I know that's nothing new.
We've been doing that for decades.
I understand that. But you can imagine if the theory is true, okay, and the Egyptian president is privy to part of the deal at the very least, he still wants the blind shake. You send him a little hush money, tell him, you know, calm down. Here's some more money. We'll get this. We'll make it happen. But you guys really screwed this up.
Yeah, the theory also is that whoever gets elected, that blind shake will be released in the lame duck session.
That's possible.
Well,
this sounds
crazier than what I'm thinking. The fact that Obama let this happen because he's so desperate that he needs anything. He needs anything to distract.
Right, and you have to remember that Obama
he probably didn't think that there was going to be that actually the real-time footage that they saw could actually be leaked, and maybe he's so desperate that he thought that this Muslim movie thing would have carried him to November 6th. But, Ron, what you're proposing, I'm not saying you're wrong because, you know where I stand, but this is worse than Godfather Part 2.
Well, I understand that, but you got to stop and think. Okay, this whole innocent Muslim movie that they're yapping about was played on Egyptian.
That was a distraction.
Well, you're right. It was, but it was played on Egyptian television. Part of the theory is that Obama and Egypt and a few other Muslim countries wanted to use the video as a podium, so to speak.
Scapegoat.
In front of the United Nations, not as a scapegoat. It wasn't really planned as part of the kidnapping thing.
But maybe the cover-up, yeah.
Well, I mean, they had to fall back on it. I think they were caught red-handed. So
sure.
I think they, in desperation, tried to fall back on that video, and it backfired on them. But the whole purpose of the video being played in Egypt was to give a backdrop for which Obama, Egypt, and other dignitaries could stand before the audience in the United Nations and promote a law that would outlaw speaking ill of Islam.
Or Muhammad,
which he,
or any of
which,
those.
Which he did at the United Nations.
Yes, he did. And so did Hillary. Both of them did.
So that was, I mean, that wasn't even part of this whole deal. That was just something that they tried to BS their way through and say, oh, it was because of this video. It was just some crazy uprising. At least we can salvage this anti-Islam, you know, quelling of free speech crap that we're trying to push through the UN, and we'll blame it on the video. At least we can bolster that part of our agenda.
Well, that failed.
Well, it sure did. And what you're proposing with Obama, I mean, if you think about it, he orchestrates the murder of our ambassador, and that's supposed to help him somehow? No way. No way. I think that it is far more plausible that you orchestrate the kidnapping of the ambassador, and then, you know, here you've already served on SEAL Team 6, and you personally shot Osama bin Laden, for God's sakes. You flew into Pakistan and went in with SEAL Team 6. You're the guy that got Osama bin Laden. Now they've kidnapped our ambassador. You go in with SEAL Team 6 and rescue the ambassador. My God, you'll be anointed Christ himself. You'll be a deity. That makes more sense to me, and that certainly bolsters Obama's chances in the election. It makes him out to be a hero. Then after the dust is settled and you're reelected, then you send the blind sheikh home for humanitarian reasons. Nobody's going to question you. You're a hero. My God, you've won the Nobel Peace Prize. You've saved our ambassador. You shot Osama bin Laden. What more do you need?
Well, Well,
you gotta remember something about this guy,
that's called the
Leviathan. Who do you think wears the pants in that Oval Office? It's Valerie Jarrett, who Obama has to share a brain with because he hasn't got one of his own. Believe me.
Isn't it funny? Because we could say the same thing about William Jefferson Clinton.
True. Because, yeah, well...
The women seem to wear the pants in those families, those administrations.
Yeah, well, yeah. So did Eleanor Roosevelt. She was a bigger she-devil than Hillary. Please, talk about socialism. What a witch.
So who else is in on this caper then?
Well, you would have to have Panetta. You would have to have Hillary.
Mm-hmm.
What about Petraeus?
I don't think Petraeus is – I don't think so at all.
Wow.
And as a matter of fact, Petraeus came out and said –
Yeah, that's what I heard.
No.
Yeah.
He said the order didn't come from anyone in the CIA. It came from the White House.
Good.
So that tells me he was not on board. He was not privy.
Wow.
All the channels were bypassed. And who's going to question?
This sounds like a mafia hit. I mean, you realize that? This sounds like a mafia hit.
Sure.
So was 9/11.
Well, it was
well,
a
right,
kidnapping
but,
gone
yeah,
bad.
I mean, absolutely. But I don't know how this is going to come to light. I mean, I'm kind of speechless on this one, you know?
I mean,
yeah,
you're talking about a kidnapping gone bad, plain and simple.
Yep. Yep.
Who's going to call for this investigation? Because no one has yet.
Oh, I don't think
Congress,
it'll ever happen.
Well, Congress is jumping up and down wanting answers on Benghazi. But, that's kind of my point at the top of the show. Where is the investigation that, you know, the likes of what we had during the Iran-Contra scandal?
Nothing.
Well, who's going to volunteer to be the fall guy? Is Hillary going to volunteer or is Panetta
going
to volunteer?
Know, it was kind of funny because when this came down on the show, I said, you know, wouldn't it be refreshing to see a politician step up to the plate and say, you know, the buck stops here. It was my responsibility. And the very next day, Hillary came out and did exactly that.
Yeah, she walked under the bus for him. And Bill's not happy.
Well, she didn't resign.
She didn't walk under the bus, though. She's very, very wise.
Yeah, she's not stupid. She's smarter than all of them put together.
She got out in front of it. She got in front of the bus and said, it's my responsibility. And now everyone's saying, no way.
So where's the resignation?
Well, there won't be one.
Well, why not? If you're responsible for somebody's death, shouldn't you step down? Shouldn't the president want her to step down then?
He doesn't.
I mean, you got to fire somebody, no?
Absolutely. And you know
so
what?
Where is it?
I think if Obama actually came out and asked for her resignation, he would probably gain some points with some independents and some Republicans, but he'd piss off a whole lot of Democrats.
Oh, my God. Clinton would order a hit on him.
Yeah, but at nine days away.
Right.
Don't you think he got to do something?
Something's got to happen. I agree. Something's got to happen. And I think that would maybe take some heat off of him.
Take a lot.
Maybe. I don't know, man, because I'm telling you, this thing's got legs, and it's running.
Yep.
Yeah, running. It's got legs. But so does the Kennedy assassination. So does 9/11. And
I know.
Nothing's come out of that.
Nope. Nothing's coming out of Fast and Furious either. And the Fort Hood shooting, nothing. It's just the.
Of course not. We're still waiting for this jackass to cut his beard off. I mean, I'd freaking take a hammer, knock the guy out, and freaking shave him raw myself. I mean, what's the damn difference? Shave the bastard. Who cares?
I'd say a syringe with some succocoline would do better.
That's too easy. Line him up and cut his head off the way they cut our people's heads off. But that's neither here nor there. Someone has to resign, and it's either going to be Panetta or Hillary. Now, I don't see Hillary doing it only because, you know, she wants 2016. So why aren't they pressing this Panetta guy to fall on his sword?
I don't know. They're thick as thieves. Come on, they're just embedded with evil.
Right, so the American people are going to vote for either party. I mean, where's ISA? Where's Rubio? Where's Romney? Where's Romney saying anything?
I know.
Where is he?
I don't know why he's given a pass on this. I don't, because this is a golden opportunity for him. Although, probably the only reason he doesn't do it is because, you know, not 9/10 of the American people are clueless about what's going on because they're willfully ignorant. They don't even. If I were to talk about any of this, if any of this was in the mainstream media, which it never will be, they would look at us like we're crazy. Just like when Angry Jew said, you know, 10 years ago, if I would have told you there would be people with blue gloves putting their hands down your pants, you know, in 10 years from now, you'd look at me like I was from Mars. It's the same thing. They don't understand anything. They're stupid.
Oh, well,
I don't think at this point that a resignation is going to cut it. I think it's going to have to come across as a firing.
Uh-huh.
Well, can these guys be fucked? Can they be fired? Can you say, Secretary of X, you're fired? I mean, can you do that?
Absolutely he can.
Well,
he's the executive.
Could he be afraid? Could he be afraid of doing it? That maybe they'll. Yeah. I mean, someone's got to be given a sweet deal here. Like I'm talking a lifetime retirement to Tahiti or something to fall on their sword, because then aren't people going to call for prosecutions and all sorts of other good stuff?
Sure. Oh, well, sure.
And then we have to have a presidential pardon. And by the time you have a trial and whatnot, it's probably in the middle of 2014 somewhere. And if Romney's president, are they going to whisper in his ear, hey, you know, Mitt, you know, to save the government from anarchy, from the American people going bananas, You're going to have to pardon this guy. Well, then there goes his reelection for sure.
It's crazy. I know. Just it's one big giant mess. Muck and mire.
Yeah,
these
well,
people's souls are dark. They're all dark.
Yeah, but it's fine. But what about the American peoples? Aren't theirs just as dark then? They're just going to go along. Oh, yeah, well, I'm going to vote. You know, Romney's the man or Barry's the man, and we're just going to do our thing. And
well, you know, I think that the majority of them are too damned ignorant to know any better.
Yep. Yeah. They'll know.
You know, they're all worried about their damn food stamps.
Oh, sure. And their welfare and their WIC and their freebie this and freebie that.
Yeah, well, this is why the election is so tight, because that's the only reason.
Oh, I know.
You know, I gotta keep my phone. You know, I gotta
right.
have my free phone. I don't care who gets killed. I need my phone.
There was I think they did interviews talking about. Oh God, I can't remember which one it was. Oh, it was NDAA, Patriot Act, and a couple others, and talking about the kill list and all this stuff, and trying to see if these idiots on the street, the ones that were voting for Obama, who are totally mind-numbed robots, and half of them, or one-fourth of them, were saying, I'll have to do my research on that. And the rest of them thought that the guy was lying about who signed what and who perpetrated what and where it started and how far in the tank for global governance Obama is. It's the allegory of the cave. They do not know anything. I would say that three-fourths of the American people at this point do not even know what you and I are talking about today. I swear to you. If they
okay, but where's the
20%? CMS,
but where's the 20% that do know what we're talking about? Where are they? What are they going to do next Tuesday?
They're going to go buy ammo.
Well, no, maybe Monday. Monday
yeah.
might be a good day for that.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, my God.
Well.
I you know, all we can do is pray, educate, read, buy the stuff, stock up on everything, and hunker down and do a lot of praying because, you know, it's a mess. The global governance, it's huge, and nobody's stopping it. We have no sovereignty. You know, the United States was declared and is a long time ago, and it's disgusting. And, you know, that's what I told Angry Jew. I said, hey, if that's in your heart to leave the country, go. You know, he's younger than I am.
Yeah, but where are you going to go? I mean, all due respect, he's a good friend of mine. He's an extremely intelligent man. Where are you going to go?
But, well, if he can do it and hang out, great. You know, I'm at the point where I've lived a good life. If it's time to go home, I'll go home, you know. But I'm going down fighting. That's it. And I'm staying, and I'm going to grow my gardens and try to take care of myself and have my food storage and be a good neighbor and a godly woman. But that's it. You know, I got to take care of my mom and my neighborhood and my family. So I can't leave. Mom's not going to go across the street, let alone across the world.
Right,
so.
but if this becomes Road Warrior or Hunger Games, where can you run to?
That's true. Absolutely. You know.
And then if you can't speak the language, you're last on the list. Because if money doesn't mean anything and you can't go dong dang ding dang dong dang, you're gone.
Yeah.
No?
Well, let me tell you.
You're an outsider, aren't you?
It didn't take me long when I was traveling as a youngster to learn Japanese. I was down close to fluent on my third tour. So if little effort, you can learn the language. Especially
well, then maybe, we all have to go and you'll be the talker.
Let's go to Japan. Tokyo's a blast, let me tell you.
Yeah, why not?
Fun
I mean, what
city.
The heck? But, you know, if everything's Road Warrior, I don't think it's going to matter where you go. Or am I wrong?
Well, I don't know. I don't know if it's. I don't know how long it takes to reach every place. I'm sure that places like Venezuela and Cuba, I mean, that's a given. And Russia and China and North Korea, they're already in the dark ages. So I don't know. I just pray a lot, and I don't know what the answer is other than my Savior. That's my answer.
And then how do you know even when to leave? As I discussed last night, an executive order has been signed, you know, the latest one. They could just freeze their account. So if they feel like freezing it tomorrow and you've got nothing, I mean, how many gold coins can you stuff in your pocket?
Exactly.
Right?
If you're serious about expatriating
yourself. And gold coins,
yourself,
you can't get a plane.
You should have left yesterday. I'm serious.
Well, right. Exactly. you don't leave when the poop is going to hit the fan. You leave before the fan gets plugged in, no?
Exactly. I know. Yeah,
so it doesn't make
really
any sense to me.
Yeah, I'm just praying that regardless of who gets in and what happens in the next 6 months or whatever, that I can get out of California in a reasonable one piece. I don't know. We'll see.
I mean, I think I'd rather be here in my small town where we basically know each other. So I can't imagine, like, my immediate neighbors trying to break through my window and kill me and get, you know, a half a loaf of bread. So
they may or may not, but I've got 109 units in this little mobile home park, okay? These people they know me. I've walked this precinct so many times. I've been to so many meetings. They know who I am. I've talked to them about the coming insurrection. They know. I got guys who can help me reload. I've already enlisted them. But it's the neighbor, it's the surrounding areas. We've got a lot of Mexican gangs here. We don't have a lot of black people here in this North County. But, you know, when people get desperate, hungry, and crazy, then, you know, then I got to take care of business. But I'm not worried about my neighbors, but I'm worried about just, you know, like six blocks away and beyond. So I have to be very careful.
Yeah, well, that's when small towns, I think, would start working together. But if you're a stranger in a strange land, who's going to help you?
Well, yeah, exactly.
You'd be the first one that they'll attack because you're an outsider. No? Or am I wrong?
Well, it may be true unless you're good like me, making friends and speaking languages and cooking the food. In Japan, it is true that the Yakuza and the military and the police are the only ones who are allowed to have guns there, although you can kill someone with a knife, and they do have those. But
you're damn right. And they got that kung fu, jujitsu, voodoo, karate kid deal going, you know? I mean, come on. What am I supposed to do with
that? That's true. Yeah. Better speak that language really fluently, babe.
Well, that's not going to happen. I don't think even Rosetta Stone can help me. I'm still trying to learn English. What do you mean?
Oh, I guess I'm blessed. My dad had that gift, and he learned languages quickly, and so did I. But
well, then I guess you better do your brushing up. But I don't think it's going to matter. I just don't think it's going to matter where you are.
Yeah.
If everything craps out and they seize your bank accounts, game over. Period.
Now, I'm going to the hills with Bill in Indiana, man. That's it. I'm hunkering down.
Hey, Linda.
Yes.
Do you still have the link that I sent you on that Benghazi theory?
Oh, gosh.
I'd like to see it.
I hope I do. When did you send it? Because I haven't been on it for a few hours.
Oh, wow. It was last week. So it would have been last Saturday.
I probably kept as many as I could. I'll try to look through it. I can't go in there now because I'll lose my signal. But
I haven't been able to find the original one because it actually laid it out in very, very easy terms. I mean, it went through a timeline of events, and I cannot find it. I find all kinds of mention of it, but I don't find the actual the first link, and it was sent to me by a friend, and I've since deleted all that stuff. But trying to remember the name of the...
Okay, if I come across it, once
I'll get it to
you and Mike.
It was something 1776 was the website.
Oh, God, I do remember that. I'll try to find it.
I wanted to get it for Mike because I know I posted it in the chat. You can go back. Well, you won't get to see the archives you won't get to see the chat
yeah.
room.
Mm-mm. Nope.
But I'm telling you, it just dang it. You know, and if you look at the timeline, and I agree, and I've got one pulled up here, you know, it says, number one, there are ongoing rumors that the U.S. and Egypt are negotiating for the release of the blind sheikh.
Well, that we know.
Although the Obama administration denies it. For almost a year, Benghazi has been under attack by Muslim extremists. That is why other nations have recalled foreign service delegations and the Red Cross had closed its operations.
Mm-hmm.
Stevens recognized the growing threats and made repeated requests for heightened security for himself and the consulate. They were denied. Stevens was in a clear hotspot with literally no discernible security attachment, which is why he wasn't staying at the embassy.
Right.
So, you know, I agree with the conclusion. These elements tend to suggest that Ambassador Stevens was intentionally left in an extremely vulnerable position, one that could lead to a successful kidnapping.
God.
I mean, what else makes sense? I mean, you either have to believe that they wanted him killed, or what's another plausible theory?
Well,
they wanted to pull off a kidnapping.
Well, another plausible theory, Ron, I think, is that, and I'm not saying that this is it, but I'm just, you know, my thinking would be is that, you know, Obama is so desperate that, you know, if there's an uprising, if there's violence, everybody will key in on that. I don't think, maybe he felt that he could somehow, you know, when you're desperate, you know, maybe you think you can get away with stuff that you normally know that you couldn't. So if he thought that maybe these uprisings and whatnot, if they could last, you know, a few weeks, and he could just fly under the radar, we could stop talking about how much of a crappy job he's done with the economy. I mean, we're really going outside the box with this, you know, Godfather Part II deal, you know? I'm just saying.
Well, I understand that. Let's see. I think I found it, actually.
Oh, good.
I'm going to grab this. It's on Freedom Rings 1776 is the name of the website. I'm just going to throw a little clip in there or a link. Yeah, this doesn't really lay it out. It's not the one I wanted, but.
Yeah, you see, that's the picture Stevens. He was still, but when they showed it on Fox, they showed like, he was still barely alive at that point.
Yeah, I mean,
probably one couple seconds away.
But he wasn't in the safe room dead already, is what I'm trying to say. You know, that smoke inhalation
deal.
Well,
I think at that point we're splitting hairs. Did he die in the safe room, or did he die? Oh, yeah, or did he die, you know, 30 minutes after they pull him out? I mean, clearly they're not giving him oxygen and trying to keep him alive. So
no, but he looks pretty beat up. So what are you saying? They found him dead of smoke inhalation and said, hey, wait a minute. We got to rough him up a little to make it look like we savagely killed him. I mean, I don't know. That's a lot. It's just a lot to take in, no?
Well, sure. But, I mean, you,
I'm just saying,
not being there. Well, no, I understand. And not being there, you just don't know. I mean, his lips are pretty blue looking, and he's got a bump on his noggin. Other than that, I think he looks like he's in pretty good shape. So maybe he hit his head when he passed out and fell down, you know?
Maybe.
I don't know.
Maybe. He sure doesn't look sodomized there yet, so I don't know when they pulled that off.
Right, exactly. Well, maybe they've got a little necrophilia going on. I don't know. I wouldn't speculate on that kind of stuff, man.
I don't want to do either. I don't.
Although it does give me an opportunity to tell my one and only necrophilia joke. And that is the definition of necrophilia is the irresistible urge to crack open a cold one.
There you go. Well, I've had that before on a hot Sunday afternoon.
Yeah, wrong kind of cold one there, Mike.
You're damn right. But I'm just saying, you know, hey, oh.
But, you know, I think the other thing that we're not talking about is the fact that we would even entertain the idea that a sitting U.S. president would be capable of orchestrating something like this.
Well, why not though? We got Fast and Furious. I mean, isn't it kind of the same thing?
Oh man, the Fast and Furious is like small potatoes compared to what we've been doing in the Middle East for the last 35, 40 years, you know?
No, I understand that, but I'm just saying in a separate incident.
Right. No, I understand.
Run guns to drug lords in an attempt to capture them.
Yeah.
And we get a couple of, you know, Border Patrol agents killed. It wasn't just Brian Terry. They never mentioned. You know, people always forget about number two. Brian Terry wasn't the only one. It was another person. And then let's not talk about scores of Mexicans that are probably dead by the hands of U.S. government guns.
Scores of them, yes.
So, you know, hey, I think we have a lot going on.
Yeah,
I mean, the whole
government
is treason. You know, we know that.
It's
so we
a mess.
Pile it on, you know.
Did you happen to get a chance to read through the lawsuit?
No, not yet.
God, man.
I have it in my, it's started. All I have to do is go get it.
Hey,
yeah.
I am all weekend long. I'm lucky enough, Ron, that I tell my wife, 2.5 hours, you're dealing with the kids alone. I'm not giving up my show. So for me to sit through a lawsuit, I'm really pushing some buttons, man. Because other than my show, I'm knee-deep in poop and formula.
There you go.
Absolutely.
Well, you know, that's a good place to be, my man.
That's a good place to be, but it just leaves little time for, you know.
I understand.
Oh, yeah.
I understand, and I've created my own distraction. You know, I started this thing with it started with a table saw, and it's gotten very expensive. But
I'm
frightened
to even ask you what you're doing.
Oh, my God. You know, I saw an idea for my reloading bench online.
Mm-hmm.
I thought, man, that's cool. If I had a table saw, I could build that. So I bought just a cheapy table saw, and it disappointed me because my abilities are lacking. I'm sure someone who's a good cabinet maker could use that cheap table saw. And I managed to accomplish what I set out to do, but I had to build, like, extensions and all this stuff for the saw just so I could do what I needed to. So I ended up buying another saw that's even larger, and now that's morphed into building a cabinet with drawers and all kinds of stuff, and it's crazy. So my $150 table saw is, but at this point, probably cost me close to $1,000 by the time I get everything, you know, all the lumber and everything else. Oh, it's crazy.
But what is the end game with this? What is?
Well,
the
end
thing
game is that, you know, my wife said, hey, you could build the kitchen cabinets. I'm not a cabinet maker. I'm not even a carpenter, but I'm learning. So. And I enjoy it. It takes my mind off things, keeps me away from the news and the internet for a while, for days.
Mm.
That's a blessing.
Yeah. It has been. It has been. So, and I get something productive and constructive in the end. And I'm learning that I know absolutely nothing about hanging drawers.
Mm.
But I did manage to actually create my first drawer, and it's perfectly square.
Nice.
Mm, very good.
And the dimensions are almost exactly what they should be. Almost.
Well, when you find that other link, you know, I'll definitely.
I know Linda has it. I unfortunately deleted all my mail because my sent files and old stuff was getting really thick.
Mm. So, Linda, you have a job this week is to find that link.
I know. My work is never done. That's okay.
No, it isn't. Oh.
But that's all right. Yeah.
I'm just hoping that we get some kind of media coverage on this lawsuit. And, you know, I find it really interesting, the whole tie-in to the CNBC executive whose family was murdered.
Well, I don't think we're going to get anything out of Fox and MSNBC and CNN.
CNBC is the only mainstream media outlet that aired it.
Wow.
And then but
somebody had to die from there, though, right?
Right. The next day, the following day, the CNBC's lead executive, his kids were murdered.
Oh, after the fact. Ooh.
Yeah, a day later.
Oh, that sounds like something's there.
So a day afterwards, you get this guy's kids are murdered, and presumably by his nanny, who then cuts her own throat.
Oh, my God.
Oh, man, so I guess we're not going to hear from Sean Hannity tomorrow night, then. I don't think
that
so.
I
think Sean's going to stay mum on that one.
And, you know, as you read through that lawsuit, I mean, part of what they're alleging, if you read between the lines, what this guy is alleging is that the higher-ups in the administration or in the Democratic Party, I guess, used the proceeds of these ill-gotten gains from the mortgage scandal that was going on to fund the election of Obama and Democrats to the Congress.
Mm. That's special.
And also used it to fund going after Roger Ailes, Fox News, Glenn Beck. So, I wouldn't put any of that beyond the realm of reality. The only problem I have with that whole thing is the guy seems to want to go out of his way to exonerate the Bushes, and I don't think they're salvageable.
Yeah, really.
Really. Well, I guess the only thing we can do is tweet this stuff, and hopefully our friends on Twitter will tweet it and Facebook it, and hopefully try to make this thing go viral. Of course, I think people would rather see me pull my pants down on a video. That has more of a chance of going viral than something really important. I mean, you know how YouTube works.
Oh, well, yeah. Well,
I'm
telling
you. 30 views. If I pull my pants down and quack like a chicken, I'll probably get a million hits. Ridiculous.
I'm telling you, it has grown exponentially since I first got the email on Thursday.
Well, then I guess we got to stop circulating this stuff. So I have the link to the lawsuit. I could pop that on Twitter real quick. So,
yeah, the PDF is awesome, and the thing is very, very well written. And I sent the link to Brian, who used to be on Patriot Family.
Right.
He used to do a show on Fridays about mortgage help, because I know he would just be enthralled. One of the things that's listed in the lawsuit is each and every single trust that was involved.
Citicorp and Countrywide, all of them.
Yeah, but
they're scumbags.
Just,
I mean, you know, they're a part of
the
whole
bank.
Thing.
Not just the banks, but the actual trust where the money was held.
Oh, my God.
Because if you look, I mean, when Brian was doing, and doing his mortgage stuff, he sent me links to PDF files of trusts with trillions of dollars in them.
Oh my God.
I got a question.
That's where the money was idle.
Where's Michael Magic been?
I don't know. I haven't seen Michael.
He didn't do the show this week, and he's going to be popping in and out when he can. Apparently, the last I heard, he's preparing for a very cold winter up there, and he's a little bit paranoid, as like many of us are. But he goes a little bit overboard, and so he's putting together some websites to sell the Life Silver and other things and natural foods, and he's just preparing for whatever. And so that's he comes in and out, and I did ask him to please get a hold of Bill Strong, so that they could host the show on the November 6th election day, because this girl is gone from 5:30 in the morning until 9:30 at night or later with the election. I'm a poll worker, so.
You have my condolences.
I actually got to learn a lot, and
I'd rather be a poll
of...
dancer. I'd rather be a poll dancer.
Well, not the way that Mike is I think, talking about, Linda. But
no, they could rather go on Springer and be a pole dancer and get some jerry beads as opposed to being a pollster on election day and deal with those retards.
I'm the one that gives them their ballot, gives them the I voted sticker, and helps them to the to the machine if they want to use it or whatever. And
are you going
to
ask for ID?
What they do is by law in California, we are supposed to ask them to recite their address in verbally, and then we repeat it back to them. And
what if they don't speak English?
Yeah. No, no hablo inglés. I vote Obama.
We have interpreters, and we have people that come from the registrar of voters to help.
I have no doubt.
There's a lot of people who actually from the Election Integrity Project here. Ruth Weiss is very active. I've been to her classes. She's amazing. She got me involved with the registrar of voters to be a poll worker, and then they have what they call outside poll observers who have to go by certain criteria. They can't film during, you know, but they can watch us open and close, and they can, as long as they don't interfere with anyone voting or go behind our desk, they're fine.
And let me ask you, the UN people there?
You stole my question, Ron. Thank you.
Sorry. I'll tell you.
That's all right.
If they show up at my poll, I don't know what I'm going to do, but maybe I'll keep my shotgun in the trunk. They better not.
Oh, wait, don't do that. Don't do that. We'll never hear from you again, man. You're going to be a domestic terrorist, Linda. Keep your gun at home.
We'll see Linda on the news.
Kidding.
You know, Eric Holder bringing a case against voter intimidation against Linda Sills.
Not even. She'll just be swept away, and we'll never hear from her. Like you never existed.
Now, I wanted I was hoping that the Angry Jew would pop in because I wanted to give him a scenario last night, and I wasn't able to do that. And I guess he's somewhat skeptical, kind of rolls his eyes at the idea of martial law being instituted in our country. One of the things, you know, I've made some preparations, but I try not to get too concrete of a plan because I think, you know, you're going to have to do a little bit of flying by the seat of your pants.
Right.
And one of the things that I think people, you know, they're committed to a certain plan and it may be their undoing. My wife has people that she works with and friends. They have property north of us in Tennessee. She said, we can go up there. You know, there's a bunch of people, tons of ammo, blah, blah, blah. And I told her, I said, well, that's all good and fine, but let me give you a scenario. You're on your way home from work. It's 6:30 in the evening. And as you're approaching the exit where you're going to turn to go towards your neighborhood, they announce on the radio that there's been some kind of a terrorist attack. Civil unrest, whatever, and the governor of this and the governor of the state has issued a curfew that everyone's got to be off the streets by 9 o'clock. As you pull into your neighborhood, you notice a couple of state patrol cars sitting at the entrance to your neighborhood. Are you then telling me you're going to run home, load up your supplies, get back in the car and go somewhere? Like the airport to go to Singapore? I don't think so.
And how are you going to get a plane if they freeze all our accounts? And like I said, I don't care how many gold coins you have in your pocket. You can't get on a plane with a gold coin. TWA ain't going to take you.
If you can't get out of your daggum neighborhood, you're not getting to the airport, Jack.
Well, right, exactly. So that's why, you know, I don't want to...
That's
get my friend all upset and everything. Like I said, he's a very intelligent man and everything. But how long are you going to wait to get out? You better leave. If that's your plan, you better leave now.
Yeah, you better have your stuff packed up and on the plane tomorrow. Because I honestly see a plausible scenario coming up very quickly where this could happen.
Oh, Ron, if Obama loses, I'm telling you, the L.A. riots are going to be nothing. And it's not going to be right away. It's going to be a slow swell. And then it's going to be a massive explosion.
Well, I mean, you know, I look at like what Linda's talking about in her neighborhood. And I live in a very decent neighborhood. But I also know what's right down the road from a very decent neighborhood. I see the graffiti, you know, the tags on anything that's flat and a surface that you could paint on. I know the gang signs and all that crap, and I mean we're practically in the country here, okay? But I know they're around. And we had this idiot here locally not long ago, and it was as much his fault as anybody else's, but they lost their home to foreclosure, right? So they couldn't take everything with them, so he put some stuff out in the driveway, and he puts an ad on Craigslist. And he says, we have to move. Everything has to go. Take as much as you want, however much you want. And when he gets back to his house, he's shocked that people have broken the door in, and they're cleaning out everything inside the house that he didn't intend to give away.
Oh, my God.
Jeez. He said it was like ants on a snow cone. They were just crawling all over the place by the time he got to the house.
Yeah, and the next town from me, oh, I wouldn't care if they dropped a nuclear bomb on it. I think it would do that. I think it would improve property values with these scumbags.
But I mean, to think that these people aren't going to take the opportunity, right. You know, because let's face it, I don't care what county, what city you live in, they only have X amount of police officers.
Right.
They can't be everywhere at the same time, and the criminal class will take advantage of that as soon as they know that all hell's broken loose. They're going to run out and find something to steal, and it might be at your home.
Yeah, well, they're going to have some extra metal in there.
They're going to be sadly disappointed at my house.
Melissa has no idea. Melissa has no idea about how she's going to think I'm Rambo if the crap hits the fan. No, because she's very like, we can't do anything. She's very like, oh, I'm afraid of everything. You know, she has no idea. I mean, I've had to keep stuff from her for her own good.
I will tell you that if it starts coming down, they've got their little bandanas and their whatever, the Mexican gang, I'm wearing my 9 on my hip from here on out. I swear to God.
Melissa has no idea, you know, of what we have in the house. I've had to keep that away from her. But she'll thank me later. You know,
exactly.
You know, thank you later.
You better get some signs put up. You know, no trespassing. Trespassers will be shot on sight. In Spanish and in English.
No. In Lynn Park, Connecticut, the cops will come here first. Call me a criminal and take everything from me. No. The element of surprise. The element of surprise. Not only will they be surprised, but Melissa's shorts might get a little wet. That's another story.
I'm going to put up one that says, nothing in this house is worth dying for.
There you go. I personally like the one that says, if you can read this, you're in range.
Wow.
It's not a fun scenario.
No.
But we are allowed to defend ourselves.
Well,
yeah, but, you know... Well, yeah, that's the thing. I mean, you're talking about, you know, that's a tough call. You got people walking up your driveway. Do you shoot them or not?
It's a very tough call because, you know, what do you do?
Yeah, you know, that's one thing we need to get together with our neighbors here. Oh, sure.
That's what I've been talking to mine for months. Hey, you know, let's rally together because we got to hold down the fort. And we know who everybody is in this park. We know, you know. So
yeah, we don't know everybody that's in the. I mean, this subdivision is massive. You're talking about 400 or 500 homes here.
Oh my gosh! Wow.
Yeah.
Well, I have to start getting ready for work, guys, because I gotta. Go to bed a little earlier because God knows what I'm facing in the morning. So I'll probably need some more traffic time.
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, take care of yourself.
Great to hear from you, Mike.
I'm finally glad that I was. It took a hurricane for me to get some free time to myself to be able to talk to people.
Well, listen, hug and kiss those little dolls for us, okay?
I certainly will. And I'll see you guys next week if I have power. I plan to do an election coverage show. Of course,
absolutely.
I'm not talking about just two of these clowns. I'm talking about a third guy.
I want to see some pictures posted on the Patriot Family site, too, by gosh.
Is it secured? Because I'm just paranoid about, you know, stuff.
Well, the only people that usually go in there is people that are part of the site, and we're all, you know, pretty close-knit, so nobody, we don't take them out.
You go in there, I've got pictures of all of my family posted on there, and some of my toys. So I you know, I don't care.
All right.
Yeah,
we're
pretty cool.
I'll have to scrounge up some. I'll have to do it. Okay.
Absolutely. We love baby pictures, you know?
All right. I'll get some in.
Outstanding. Man, thanks for calling in and, you know, taking the time out of
your
schedule to call in and participate. And I hope you guys can ride it out. And I hope it doesn't get too bad for you up there.
Yeah, we'll see. Well, my in-laws have it. Like I said, they have a generator, so they're prepared. The domestic terrorists.
Yep.
I know.
No, they're fine. So, and they'll be okay because they voted for Obama, so they're considered friendly to the government.
Yep.
So that shouldn't be a problem.
They'll be on the Republicans' red list.
Oh, but that doesn't count, though. But that doesn't count. You know.
Have a good night, Mike. Thanks.
All right, you too, both of you. And I'll talk to you soon, and hopefully see you next Saturday on the hot seat, and we'll talk about the presidency, laugh and cry at the same time.
All right, hon.
Good night.
God bless.
Night. God bless you both. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. All right, everybody, and that was the host of the Hot Seat Left is Never Right, Mr. Mike up in Connecticut. So if you ever get the opportunity on a Saturday to stop in and listen to his show, he used to be on Friday nights at 9, but he switched it to Saturday due to his scheduling conflicts with new twins and all, but always a good show. Always enjoy Mike's show. Miss Linda, I appreciate you calling in. I've got about 18 minutes left. Is there anything else on your mind that you wanted to talk about? Or
just basically, I know that Mike had invited me next Saturday to show to do a little blurb on Agenda 21, and this Wednesday I had mentioned also to a couple people that I wanted to do my first half hour on Agenda 21. Again, there were a lot of requests about it. I think it's time to start explaining to people what it is, how permeating it is into everybody's communities. We need to understand the specifics of the code words and their Hegelian dialectic that they use, as you know, to kind of smooth talk their way into our lives and to be totalitarian tyrants that they are. So that's what I'm going to do there, and then I'll take my phone calls from that point, you know. And God bless you for doing the show and bringing up Benghazi and all the things we do. And we, you know, we just got to do that, which is correct. We've got to understand who our Savior is. We've got to love our families and just prepare and try to take this in stride because we'll get through it. And if we don't, they'll take us home and, you know, I'd love to get through this and be able to see you guys next year for a reunion. That would be fantastic. So, you know, we'll see. Time will tell. It's in God's hands. That's all I know.
Oh, man. I believe that you are absolutely correct. And I did finally manage one of the clips loaded. This was John McCain during one of the presidential debates in the 08 election. So I wanted to play this because he's really touting the freedom fighters. So let's listen to this one. It's about a minute and 37.
Okay.
Teddy Roosevelt used to say, walk softly, talk softly, but carry a big stick. Senator Obama likes to talk loudly. In fact, he said he wants to announce that he's going to attack Pakistan. Remarkable. You know, if you are a country and you're trying to gain the support of another country, then you want to do everything you can that they would act in a cooperative fashion. When you announce that you're going to launch an attack into another country, it's pretty obvious that you have the effect that it had in Pakistan. It turns public opinion against us. Now, let me just go back with you very briefly. We drove the Russians out, with the Afghan freedom fighters drove the Russians out of Afghanistan, and then we made his most serious mistake. We washed our hands of Afghanistan, the Taliban came back in, Al-Qaeda, and we then had the situation that required us to conduct the Afghan war. Now, our relations with Pakistan are critical because the border areas are being used as safe havens by the Taliban and Al-Qaeda and other extremist organizations. And we have to get their support. Now, General Petraeus had a strategy. The same strategy, very different because of the conditions and the situation, but the same fundamental strategy that succeeded in Iraq, and that is to get the support of the people. We need to help the Pakistani government go into Waziristan, where I visited, a very rough country.
Well, you know, that was just a little clip there. And, you know, it's interesting that he says, you know, if you want these people to help you, you don't announce that you're going to attack them. I guess that doesn't apply with Iran.
Unbelievable. You know, I also heard something interesting on one of the talk shows, and you probably know who David Horowitz is, and he studied
yes.
the Middle East quite a bit. And he said that this Al-Qaeda group is actually a prodigy or the child of the parent company, the Muslim Brotherhood, who are supporters of Hezbollah and Hamas. These people are not our friends, and they're being paraded through our White House. As you know, they've infiltrated everything in this country. This is not an idle threat, and
well,
they want Sharia law. This is bad.
I personally think that infiltration is the wrong adjective. I think they've been positioned.
Right.
And I don't think it was an accident.
No.
I don't think they had to apply for those positions. And it certainly didn't happen in a vacuum.
Yep.
Where you know, higher level officials didn't know who these people are. Are you, I mean, seriously.
Oh yeah.
But
this
we
is,
have
well,
to
it,
we
this
have
has
to
been
go
going
back.
On for decades. Yeah.
Well, we have
I mean,
to go back to the end of World War II to look at the
God.
Muslim Brotherhood.
Sure.
And their creation. And what blows my mind is the idea that okay, we have the Muslim Brotherhood in Egypt after World War II. And you don't believe, or I'm not pinpointing you, I'm saying people don't believe that our government would utilize a group like the Muslim Brotherhood.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, that belies logic. It certainly flies in the face of what we know. Well, we wouldn't use the Muslim Brotherhood, but we would use the Mujahideen Freedom Fighters, who we now call Al-Qaeda, except for when they're in Libya, they suddenly become freedom fighters again. And then when they go to Syria, they're definitely freedom fighters there. But when they're in Afghanistan, they're bad Al-Qaeda. When they're in Iraq, they're bad Al-Qaeda. But they weren't in Iraq until we were in Iraq. I mean, it's insanity. So to think for a moment that our government wouldn't utilize a group that is already functioning and has an organization behind it, such as the Muslim Brotherhood, would be naive at best.
So with all of this stuff that we know, our stupid government, what is their end game? Is it just to keep propping up the military-industrial complex for money and power? Is this their...
Well, I think, you know, it depends on which conspiracy theory we want to follow. If
right.
we look at it from the big picture idea of a new world order, one world
right.
government, total
right.
control, total domination, somebody's got to be more or less in charge.
Pulling the strings. Then this is why we feel like we're being bombarded from all sides, but it's all coming from one entity, and that would be the elitists that are pulling the strings, and they're using every method to bombard us that they can. The UN, Agenda 21, the Muslim Brotherhood, a new caliphate, all of this crap, the NDAA. That's what they're doing, the old communist crap. This is what they're doing, Ron, and I think they've been doing it for so long, probably over 100 years. That's what I see.
Well, let's think about a scenario. What happens, and you know, I just popped in my brain, but what happens if you have a global meltdown financially and all the governments are broke? And you've got
right.
chaos and war. Who's
right.
the only government left standing but the UN?
Exactly. Oh, yeah. Evil is patient and evil learns. That's all I can say. But,
and,
you know.
And I have no doubt. I mean, George Bush was adamant that we were simply enforcing UN resolutions when we went into Iraq.
Yeah. Yeah, these guys, I think they're completely subsidized and wholly owned by the Illuminati. That's my theory. I mean, they have to be.
So, I mean, we've got the, on one hand, we've got the United Nations. On the other hand, we have NATO. And they play the UN and NATO off of each other just as well as they play the Democrats and Republicans.
Sure. Oh, God, yeah. Well,
it's another,
you know,
left-right game, you know?
Oh, we're so screwed, except for where we're going in the afterworld. Oh, well, just keep fighting, guys, and thanks so much for taking my call, and I'm going to go back in the chat room. You can finish it off, and we will see you tomorrow, right, for Constitution
Yes, ma'am.
Hour.
Constitution
okay,
Hour.
You
betcha.
God bless.
God bless you, hon. Thanks for calling. And that Linda is correct. Tomorrow night, right here, 7 p.m., we will have yours truly hosting the Constitution Hour. On Tuesday night, we will have Mr. Bill Strong with Patriot Families Chat. On Wednesday, the lovely Miss Linda Sills with Right from the Left Coast. On Thursday, Miss Terry Rowland with Patriot Education. Friday and Saturday right now are kind of up in the air. Maybe we'll do a impromptu, a little round table or something. And then, of course, I'll be back Sunday with Fed Up Frank. And, Linda, while you're still in the chat listening, I want to suggest to you that you increase the length of your show to 2 hours so that you can cover more of the Agenda 21 stuff. As you're well aware, an hour seems to just fly past. It seems like a matter of just 10 minutes and it's gone. So you always bring a lot of good information, and I would encourage you to increase the length of your show to 2 hours or 3 hours so that you can get out more information and create a timeline in the Agenda 21. I think that would be very beneficial, not only to yourself, but to everyone else, you know, who's listening. And trying to piece these things together. That being said, I am going to leave you guys with a song, and I think it's quite appropriate. You know, I put this in here quite some time ago, but man, it always rings true. So welcome to Styx, The Grand Illusion. All right, everybody. I want to thank you all for tuning in. And God bless everybody, and just stay safe. A lot of crazy stuff going on. Keep your head on straight and keep focused on the main goal. That's Jesus Christ. Keep your eye on Him. He won't steer you wrong. God bless. Good night. We'll see y'all tomorrow.